Thank you, Andy. When I got the lectureship brochure and I saw that I was the first speaker after lunch, I asked, why me? Then I realized that was my topic. It's so good to be with you. I appreciate this congregation more than I can possibly put into words. I'm thankful for the school. I'm thankful for the director, for all of the teachers, and for the sound eldership that oversees it. It is always a great honor for me to appear on this lecture series. Why me? It's ironic that this happens to be the title of my assignment because this was the question I never asked once in my 2-year siege with pancreatitis. I simply refused to utter it, even once. The reason being is I believe that doing so, I would impugn God's love and thereby cast blame on Him for my illness. And given my dire situation, that is the last thing I wanted to do. In James chapter 5 and verse 11, we have these well-known words recorded, "Ye have heard of the patience of Job." Here at the outset, let me assure you of this fact. I am no Job. What has happened to me in the past 11 and a half years and what befell Job is much more dissimilar than not. Now, granted, some of it is compared to, and more emphasis is given to the word some than the word compare. And I say that because Job's ordeal and mine only collate in one area. The man from Uz literally lost everything except his pulse. In domino-like succession, he lost his vast wealth, his 10 children, his wife, for all practical purposes, his health, his friends, and perhaps his sterling reputation took a hit, given the fact that he finds himself sitting among the ashes in Job chapter 2 and verse 8. But as far as I was concerned, the loss that I experienced was confined to health. That's it. I still retain financial wherewithal. All of my children, I assure you, are very much alive, and they're healthy. My wife is the antithesis of Job's, and I have more friends than any man deserves. And as for sitting, most of that time is done in a lazy boy recliner, and never in ashes. Most emphatically, I say again, I'm no Job. To say that I am is a gross overstatement. And therefore, any parallel made between me and the beleaguered patriarch is lopsided at best. Now, kindly allow me to shine the spotlight on what I call my inferior bout. Because through the years, well-meaning brethren have said, now you know how Job felt. And so many times, I've been tempted to say, no, I don't. And I don't want to know. Only Job and the Lord knew that. I can't begin to know how Job felt. And yet I understand why people say that. So what I'm going to tell you next is pretty much an unabridged account of the things that I've gone through health-wise in the last 11 plus years. And please forgive me ahead of time for the personal references. I spent in excess of 160 days hospitalized due to acute necropancreatitis. 136 of those days were consecutive. And this often fatal condition resulted in diabetes, kidney failure, 6 blood transfusions, an ileostomy and reversal, a biliary bypass of the bile duct, pneumonia, 5 staph infections all at the same time, gangrene of the colon, 5 stomach surgeries, a stomach ulcer, 5 weeks in surgery ICU, 3 MRIs, 17 CAT scans, X-rays, too numerous to count, an angiogram, 2 hydroscans, 2 lipotripsies, 6 endoscopies, 2 colonoscopies, 2 mysterious internal bleedings where my hemoglobin fell to 5.0, a bone infection, a bone marrow test, 2 foot surgeries, a toe amputation, 11 days on a ventilator, and the loss of 109 pounds. From March of this year to September, I had 9 different casts on my right foot due to diabetic ulcers. Now, please understand, I include this litany only to show you how little I have in common with pitiful Job. All of my problems have been restricted to the area of health. And furthermore, those problems have been spread out over a decade. Job, on the other hand, was hit with tsunami force. And all these things happened at once, sweeping away everything that was near and dear to him, the loss of health just being one. And other than our names beginning with the letter J and a loss of health, that's about the extent of our commonality. Also keep in mind that Satan personally touched Job. Now, had Satan been permitted the same excess to me, the results may very well have been different. And even though my faith was dipped in the crucible, it was only tested in a single area. And so consideration must be given to the totality of what Job endured. You know, if suddenly I would have to fill 6 caskets with the bodies of my children, would I then scream out, "Why me?" If I suddenly faced financial ruin, the loss of my reputation and friends, would I begin to question God then? If my wife told me to curse God and die, I know how I would like to react and should react, but would I? Would my first reaction be to fall down and worship, saying, "Blessed is the name of the Lord"? I think I know Job, and I know I know me. And I would never presume that I and Job are spiritual bookends. I can assure you that a physical and a spiritual disparity exists between us. Nonetheless, we do have a couple of thin similarities, those being the loss of health and the retention of faith in God. But again, I must acquiesce to Job on both counts. And so the title of my assignment puts me in a conundrum. How can I answer the question, "Why me?" when I never asked it? I can't. And despite of all my ongoing health issues, I still refuse to ask it. Better questions might be, why not me? Or why have I received so many blessings when others haven't? Why has God chosen to be so good to me? Or who am I that he should be mindful of me? Be that as it may, I shall do my best to address the question. Let's examine our text, Job 3, beginning at verse 11 and going down through the end of the chapter. In this passage, the deeply afflicted Job poses some questions that begin with the interrogative, why? In fact, the word why is found 5 times in these 16 verses. And even though Job never comes right out and says verbatim, why me? It certainly seems to be implied by the nature of his questions. But let's not be too hard on Job. When we consider all that he went through, the celerity with which it came, coupled with the lack of any explanation for it, we very well might be asking the same questions. If faced with what he was faced with, why me, very well might be the first question out of our mouth. Now in this section, Job sets forth 7 wishes. 3 are morbid. 3 are agreeable. And 1 is inexcusable. The first one is his wish for death. In verses 11 and 12. Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me? Or why the breasts that I should suck? These morose words underscore the horrendous emotions that Job was experiencing at the time. And the chapter begins with a very unusual birthday wish in that Job wishes he had had no birthday. But since he did, he craves it to be wiped off the calendar and to be expunged from the birth roll of history. In verses 11 and 12, Job continues the same line of thought by asking why 4 times regarding the circumstances of his birth. Now, he may not have had a death wish when he said these things, but in retrospect, he clearly wishes that he had never been born. And I don't believe these verses show in any way that Job was suicidal. If, and I mean that word if suicide is what his wife has suggested in chapter 2 and verse 9, he had already rebuffed her for it. Now, was he depressed? He certainly was. Dejected? Absolutely. Despondent? Sure. Who among us wouldn't have been? And though Job is unique, chapter 1 and verse 8, he was nonetheless a man. But his wish for death was only retrospective. His death wish applied only to the day of his birth. There is absolutely no evidence at all that Job ever considered taking his life. The idea of suicide just doesn't mesh with his character. Nevertheless, it is clear from these verses he wished he had never been born. Because had he not, he would have been spared these afflictions. Instead of being suicidal, Job resigned himself to meet life with grim resolve. It's as though he is saying, if I had never been born, I would not have to live. And no matter how traumatically demanding the requirements were, living was his decision. Now, was not Job, by intimating these questions, asking, why me? I think so. Is that not at the root of all his questions? Essentially, they can be condensed into, why did I have to be born? Why me? He states, I'd been better off had my mother suffered a miscarriage. Why didn't that happen? Or why wasn't I stillborn? Why was I allowed to draw my first breath outside the womb? Why was I permitted my mother's nourishment? Why did I live long enough to be bounced on the knee? All of these questions smack of why me? But notice that Job omits any allusion to wishing his mother had aborted him in the womb. Surely, if such a brutal practice was condoned by God, the pen of inspiration certainly would have revealed it in Job's case. On the other hand, I had a wish for life. In the past 11 years, things never got so bleak that I began asking similar questions. But in all fairness to Job, I didn't undergo anything remotely close to what he did. I don't have perfect health, yet I've never wished I'd never been born, especially when I thought I might die. But if I suddenly found myself sitting on an ash heap, scraping myself with a potsherd, having lost everything and everybody, I doubt that I could resist blurting out, why me, Lord? Why did you let me be born? The second wish Job expresses is his wish for the grave, verses 13 through 16. For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept, then had I been at rest, with kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or as an enemy untimely birth, or as a hidden untimely birth, I had not been as infants which never saw light. Not only does Job wish he had never been born, he also wishes he had long been buried. And this morbid desire stresses, I think, how horrible this man felt. Can you imagine the trials of life so bad as to ache and pine for the grave? He essentially says in verse 13, had I died at birth, I would now be lying still and quiet, sleeping in my grave. Oh, what pain and anguish he was going through. He is reeling over the sudden death of his children, and to compound matters, he's covered from top to bottom with burning boils. Lying still? Hardly. Lying quietly? Impossible. And yet he reckons if he was in the ground, he would be at rest, unable to be reached by such sorrow and pain. In verses 14 and 15, Job mentions entombed kings, counselors, and princes. Why? What is he hinting at? He seems to be saying if warmongering kings and bloodthirsty advisors of such are at peace in their graves, why can't I be? And he continues in verse 16 by expressing the futile wish for an early miscarriage. The word hidden indicates a very early miscarriage. In fact, so early as to be unable to distinguish the gender of the fetus. And this wish is in harmony with his words of verse 3. Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. Verse 16 clearly shows that Job is not saying those who are not born are not human, as the abortionist would have us believe. Neither is Job bringing into question the fact that the unborn have souls. He is only saying that those who die before they are born will not have to suffer as he has suffered. Now let's take a moment and consider the grave's motivating factor. What was it that caused Job to wish for the grave? Was it his loss of wealth? It's highly doubtful. After being hospitalized only 2 weeks of what would turn into 20, material possessions meant nothing to me. I had recently bought a 100-year-old Victorian house. I had a new pickup in the garage, and I can truthfully say that those things did not mean a thing in the world. A life-threatening illness puts things into perspective mighty quick. As for Job's loss of possessions, I seriously doubt from God's appraisal of him in chapter 1, verse 1, and again in verse 8, that he had a predilection for covetousness. His attitude, "The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord," is admirable. Was Job's wish for a plot in the cemetery brought on by the loss of health? Once again, it's doubtful, because sickness made me want to get well. And when the doctor grimly informed me that my condition had a high mortality rate, I desperately wanted to live. And so I don't think it was the boils and the fever that had Job pining for a hole in the ground. Was it the virtual loss of his wife? Surely her discouragement played a role. Was it the loss of his social standing? No, not when we consider the character of the man and the remarkable things that God says about him in the beginning of the book. And so without question, the tragedy that hit him the hardest and made his life hardly worth living was the death of his children. All the rest could be regained, and according to chapter 42, it was. In the end, God blessed him with a second set of sons and daughters. But these original sons and daughters were gone, and nothing would call them back. When I was sick, the fact that was constantly reinforced in my mind was the importance and the preciousness of my wife and children. And as long as I had them by my side, I had every reason to fight for my life. Listen, Job did not have that. His children were in the ground while his wife was telling him to curse God and die, and Job didn't have an inkling that God would abundantly bless him later. Rather, his attitude was, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him." Chapter 13 and verse 15. If it was God's will that he go to the grave, so be it. He was ready and he was willing. But my wish was to stay above ground. But again, I'm no Job. Our lives don't mesh much at all. Job had nothing. Job had no one. I had everything but one thing, my health. And so peace was more attainable for me than he. Job's third wish is his wish for peace, verses 17 through 19. "There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master." Rest in peace in the hospital is rare. But I realized, and I found another kind of peace and another kind of rest. And I believe that God would eventually make me better. And though I never asked him why me, I'll tell you this, I did ask him how long will it be until I recover. And finally, after 100 days in the hospital and countless prayers, I began to get better. God heard and answered those innumerable prayers, and in just a little over a month from that point, I was discharged. And I then understood firsthand what Paul meant when he said, "Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding shall guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus." Even in a time when I nor the doctors knew what would become of me, I experienced this unexplainable peace of which Paul spoke. But poor Job lacked this peace. In verses 17 through 19, he is still longing to be 6 feet under. He desires the reputed peace one enjoys when freed from the difficulties of life, and not the peace one can have in spite of them. In his limited understanding, Job doesn't see suffering and death or any blessings in it. He was not privy to New Testament teaching and the anguish the wicked suffer in the nether world. And Job teaches in these 3 verses that death is a great leveler and that death is no respecter of persons. His concept of death was simply an escape from life's miseries. But we know that it's far more than that. For the faithful child of God, it is entrance into the celestial realm. But for the wicked, it is a casting into everlasting fire. Keep in mind that Job's wish for peace was misguided, being made in the thick haze of grief. However, his probing question, "If a man die, shall he live again?" reveals he had hope for more than just a grave to occupy. Job's 4th wish is his wish for understanding, verse 20. "Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul?" Here Job skirts ever closer to asking the lamentable, "Why me?" He seeks understanding. He's groping for an answer. Here is a man who has been materially blessed beyond compare. Not only that, he was one of a kind in the spiritual department. So why is he suffering? Why did all this tragedy befall him? He seems to be asking, "Why did I enjoy such a high quality of life only to be on the verge of having it snuffed out?" I don't think Job is throwing a pity party. It appears he is posing this question in all sincerity. Little does he know the tremendous impact his life and patience would have on every generation to follow. And without doubt, this is one of the main reasons God allowed him to suffer, to show everyone that faith and trust in God enables us to get through anything life hurls at us. Unlike Job, I had the hindsight of Scripture, which reveals to me the benefits of suffering. This was one advantage that enabled me to have the will not to complain to God and not to ask the question, "Why me?" Suffering helped me to see my dependence upon God. Illness helped me see the power of prayer. It brought me closer to God. It caused me to have a greater appreciation for my blessings. It helped instill in me empathy for others when they suffer. It built patience. I knew all of this firsthand, but Job didn't. And that causes me to have even greater admiration for this battered man. His 5th wish is similar to the first in that his wish for death is restated in verses 21 and 22. which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than for hid treasures, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Oh, how he suffered. Later he says, my soul chooseth death rather than life. My days are extinct. The graves are ready for me. Job 7 in verse 15 and 17 in verse 1. It's hard to imagine a person's pain and grief being so intense that they would rather dig their own grave than dig for treasure. And although Job craves death and knows that no one would blame him for taking his life, he knows he cannot. Permit me to restate my wish for life. Pancreatitis is a dreadful illness to endure. But in spite of the agonizing abdominal pain, the nonstop bouts of vomiting, I never once relished going to an early grave. I happily chose living in chronic pain over death. I gladly dug for the treasures of life. I tried to keep the thought of dying out of my mind. In other words, it was the fear of death that helped keep me alive. But I did not know if that would be enough. My spirit was strong, but my body was about to play out. And one morning, my doctor came in with a grave look on his face. And he told me that I would have to have surgery. He then informed me that it was a very high-risk surgery, and a lot of people that have this surgery die. I was only 42 years old at the time, so I asked him, do you think I'll make it? You know, given my age, I expected a quick and confident reply. I didn't get one. After a long pause, my doctor said, I think so. It's a judgment call. I then asked him, well, what if I don't have the surgery? He said quite bluntly, you'll spike fevers and die. So if I didn't have the surgery, I would die. If I had the surgery, I could die. But because I so wanted to live, I put my trust in God and I went under the knife. Look at Job's sixth wish, his wish to blame God, verses 23, 24, and 25. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid and whom God hath hedged in? For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. For the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is coming to me. Obviously, this is the wish I characterized as inexcusable. And later on, Job seems to aim his remarks toward the Almighty by suggesting that if life's injustices are not the Lord's fault, who else is responsible? Chapter 9 and verse 24. Much worse than asking why me, Job in these verses is guilty of criticizing God. And here's where Job's sheen loses some luster. He's human after all. And regarding Job's mindset, Wayne Jackson says the following. The language he chose is quite interesting. Earlier, Satan had charged that the man of Uz served God selfishly because the Lord had made a hedge of blessings about him. Now with the same term, Job complains that God has hedged him in with suffering. This is the first indication that the patriarch now blames God for his anguish. With his lips, he has sinned. As bad as things were, Job didn't have a right to cast blame on God. And no matter how bad things are for us, or one day might become, we too have no license to charge God for life's troubles. Random things happen, according to Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 11. Nonetheless, most blame for the trials of life can ultimately be traced back to man and placed squarely upon his shoulders. God never intended or never wanted the human race to suffer. Rather, he intended that Adam and Eve live forever without sin, and yet they chose to sin. And they had to suffer the consequences. Although suffering is in this world, God is not culpable. Why would anyone who is experiencing pain and grief and suffering want to impute the only one that can deliver them? Why is God so quick to be blamed? Why not blame the devil? He's the tempter. He's the destroyer. He's the one who afflicted Job. Just a perusal of the problem of suffering uncovers human derivation, either our own or someone else's. Far too many people look at life and God as being one and the same. And we must be careful never to confuse the two, because that kind of flawed thinking makes any undesirable situation ripe for condemning God. And that's what happened to Job. He had reached a point where he could no longer distinguish between his deplorable life and the divine God. Verses 24 and 25 reveal both the physical and the emotional turmoil Job was enduring. He says, "For my sighing cometh before I eat." There are two possible explanations. The New International Version has, "Sighing comes to me instead of food," suggesting a loss of appetite. The text of the American Standard Version reads just like the King James, but has the footnote, "like my food." Thus an alternate reading would be, "For my sighing cometh like my food." And that suggests that his pain was as regular as his meals. But either explanation shows the physical side of his affliction. From the emotional standpoint, Job declares, "And my roarings are poured out like the waters, for the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is coming to me." These roarings would be groanings brought on by the physical and the emotional trauma that he was enduring. Regarding these roarings poured out like water, Albert Barnes says, "In number, they were like rolling billows, perhaps also in sound like them." Also, he means to say that his groans were attended with a flood of tears, or that his tears were like the waves of the sea. Verse 25, "For the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is coming to me." There's no justification for assuming that Job lived in constant fear of one day losing it all. What happened to him was unique. How could he begin to anticipate it? He was not an alarmist. What he feared was God, chapter 1 and verse 1. What does he mean then? You recall how he was the recipient of one piece of bad news, one right after another, in chapter 1? Upon hearing the first news, he didn't have time to compose himself before he was told another and another. Four horrific news bulletins coming in almost at the same time. And as the news was carried to him by lone survivors, he undoubtedly dreaded, "What's next?" Perhaps what Job greatly feared was the next piece of bad news, as well as having to cope with the sad days to follow. While I was sick in the hospital, my wish was to thank God. The news that I kept getting from my team of doctors grew progressively worse, but I was never tempted to blame God. And like Job, I too lost my appetite. The mere thought of food repulsed me. And like Job, I did a lot of moaning, and I did a lot of groaning, and I shed a lot of tears. But what I did most of all was pray. And brethren all over the world prayed for me. And if I get to heaven, one of the first things I intend to do is ask the Lord, how many prayers came up on my behalf in 2002? Until that time, I will remain ever curious as to the number, because without those prayers, I would not be delivering this lecture today. One of the passages that aided me greatly in my struggle for life were the first three verses of the 103rd Psalm. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases. In my Bible, above the heading of that psalm, I have etched in ink, remember 2002. And it serves as a constant reminder to thank God for all he has done for me. And Job's seventh wish is possibly his wish for the former days, verse 26. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came. Job appears to be referring to when calamity first struck and kept on striking. But Adam Clark writes, if this verse is to be read interrogatively, it will give a good and easy sense. And what Clark suggests is the switching places of I was to was I, thus having it read, was I not in safety? Had I not rest? Was I not in comfort? Yet trouble came. Throughout Job's ordeal, he unquestionably longed for the former days of security and peace and comfort. But as far as he was concerned, such days were gone forever. Did he appreciate them as much as he should have? I believed he did, since he was a man who worshiped God and was held by him in high esteem. God must have known Job to be a grateful man, because in the end, he blessed him with twice as much as he had before. What about us? Are we as grateful as we ought to be for God's numberless blessings? With what motivation do we ask God, why me? If we ever ask this question, may it be one of thankful inquiry. That is, why have you blessed me so richly when others have so very little? Yes, indeed, sometimes I too wish for the former days, when I could take two steps at a time, when I weighed 250 pounds and I could bench press my weight, when I could carry a 90-pound bag of cement under each arm, when I could run 6 miles and not breathe hard, and my resting pulse was 40, I would simply like to go back to the days when I could feel a pair of shoes on my feet before neuropathy took its toll. But more than all of that, I am thankful for today and each and every day God has given me since he raised me from my sick bed. And so live for today, not yesterday. And may we ever refrain from asking our all-loving God, why me? Thank you.